If you've got spring fever, Lowe's has the cure. During SpringFest, make your landscape stand out with three free bags of Miracle-Gro 3/4 cubic foot garden soil when you buy three. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances to keep clothes, food, and dishes fresh all season long. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 4/22 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Welcome, friend. It's that time again, isn't it? You remember what we all used to do on Friday nights? Hang out with friends, smoke regular strength pot, chase tail. Man, those were the days, weren't they? No, I don't really miss them, Chester. I'm perfectly happy just sitting home and reading stories. And plus, the pot's way stronger now. Anyway, come on in, friend. That's better. A regular old cigarette. No wacky tobacco. You know what else is great these days? SimplyScaryPodcast.com. You can become a patron there and get their entire catalog dating back to 2012, ad-free and available to download or stream. You'll never need to leave the house again. Can you imagine that? All right. And come visit your pal on Patreon.com/DrewBlood while you're at it. Hope to see you there. Thanks, Chester. Almost forgot. So our tale tonight comes courtesy of a new author to the show, R.K. Combrink, and our pals at Velox Books. And for anyone out there with an older brother, this one's a good reminder to be grateful you're still alive. And although my older brother almost took my life on 3 separate occasions, he also saved my life on at least 7 occasions. And he prevented one of my 2 near kidnappings. So yeah, I'm grateful. Alright, so without further delay, from author R.K. Combrink, I give you Giant. While he waited for Kevin, Ricky read the poster tacked to the telephone pole across the street. Under the words "missing dog" was a black and white photo of a fuzzy mutt wearing a Santa hat and a name. The name Skipper was printed below the photo along with a phone number and address. Ricky disregarded it almost immediately. He hadn't seen the thing, and besides, it wasn't his dog. He turned and called to his brother.
You're such a baby.
He leaned against the guardrail and spat a foamy wad of saliva over the curb and down into the creek below. On the sidewalk, his younger brother Kevin chewed his lip hesitantly and glanced along either side of the street to see if anyone heard. No one was out except one old lady watering her lawn 4 houses up.
Am not? You're the baby. A big fat baby girl.
Ricky smiled sweetly back and shrugged. In the fall, he'd be in the 6th grade, and 6th graders couldn't be harmed by the feeble insults of scaredy-cat little kids. He began singing in a high-pitched, whiny voice.
Rock-a-bye, Kevin, in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock.
Kevin made his way over to the guardrail and peered nervously into the shady throat of the creek. Lush, overhanging trees and bushes clung to its sloping banks. Up on the sidewalk, out amongst the well-kept yards and newly built houses, it was high summer, hot and humid. But down there, down where the dark water whispered around large flat rocks, it would be cool and gloomy. There might be snakes. There might be all kinds of things. It was a wild and secret place. A dark green gash in the lacquered facade of suburban sprawl. The creek itself spilled out from a concrete culvert that ran beneath Cedar Drive. It cut a trickling, crooked course through a line of trees that rambled behind the development for miles. Ricky saw the reluctance on his younger brother's face and sighed.
Come on, man. Don't you want to see an entire abandoned neighborhood? Jamie Lynch says it's badass.
He pulled a small flashlight from his back pocket.
We'll have this for inside the houses.
Kevin tried not to look worried.
So, We're actually going in somebody's house? They're empty houses, stupid. And yes, what'd you think we were doing?
Kevin shook his head.
Ricky, I don't want to do this. Maybe Mom will take us to the pool. And we could go ask her. Let's go ask her right now.
Ricky glowered down at his little brother, exasperated.
Jesus Christ, Kev, you're such a little pussy.
He felt a little bad seeing how Kevin recoiled at the harshness of the word and tried to soften his tone a little.
We can go to the pool later. I want to go see the abandoned houses.
He gestured with the small flashlight, waving it vaguely at the woods.
Don't you want to see that? It'll be like the ruins on Johnny Quest. We'll be like Johnny and Haji.
Kevin squinted up at Ricky.
Well, who's going to be Johnny and who's going to be Haji?
Ricky rolled his eyes and grunted.
Oh, God, you can be Johnny, okay? And I'll be Haji. You can lead the expedition and pick the first treasure to bring home.
He held the flashlight out to Kevin, butt end first.
I'll even let you carry the flashlight.
Kevin reached out reluctantly, his fingers grazing the plastic hilt of the flashlight.
What if Mom calls for us? What if we get in trouble?
Ricky flapped his hand, dismissing this concern.
Don't be such a goody-good. Nobody's going to get in trouble. When was the last time Mom called for us in the middle of the day? What about that time Dad came early to get us for the weekend?
The younger boy's eyes were filled with doubt. Ricky threw his hands up in frustration and shouted,
That was a Friday. Today is Wednesday. Nobody's coming to get us. Mom's asleep on the couch. Please act like you've got some balls and come exploring with me. I swear to God, if you just do this, I'll go to school and tell everybody how cool you are.
Kevin smiled despite his apprehension.
For real? Yes.
Ricky hiked one leg over the guardrail and stepped onto the concrete lip of the culvert.
For real. Now come on.
He climbed the rest of the way over, and Kevin, with a final longing glance back at the sunlit street, followed along. The boys hung from the culvert and dropped, their sneakers plunging into the ankle-deep water. It was shockingly cold on such a hot day. They turned and headed up the center of the stream. Ricky made no effort to stay dry, kicking and splashing, soaking his shorts and shirt thoroughly. Kevin, by contrast, stepped cautiously from rock to rock, keeping his feet out of the water as much as possible. They tromped along the creek for a good half hour before encountering a sharp bend to the right. The boys followed this, and soon the stream narrowed to a bare trickle just a few inches in width. Thick, dark mud clung to their shoes and sticker bushes scratched at their clothes. They hadn't seen any snakes or frogs, but bugs were plentiful. Spindly-legged mosquitoes buzzed from all around, lighting on the boys' arms, necks, and knees, drawing blood before flitting off again. There were moths fluttering sluggishly through the shadows and a choir of crickets, cicadas, and katydids singing from the bushes and trees. Ricky stopped, bent down, and flipped over a huge flat stone riddled with fossilized shells, holding it up on its side.
Want some lunch, Kev?
He smiled wickedly as dozens of gigantic black water bugs trundled busily through the dripping water along the rock's underside. Kevin yelped and nearly tripped over his own feet as he backpedaled. Ricky laughed at his brother until one of the bugs crawled over the edge of the stone and onto his hand. Ricky let out a startled scream and dropped the rock, shaking his arm wildly to dislodge the intruder. Kevin exploded into a hysterical fit of giggles as his brother hopped and jittered, howling with revulsion. When Ricky realized the bug was gone, he became still and favored his brother with a steely glare that dried up all the younger boy's laughter. He jabbed a ferocious finger in the air to punctuate his words.
I hope to God something big and nasty crawls on you like that. I can't wait to laugh my ass off and just watch you scream.
Kevin's expression drooped miserably.
I'm sorry, Ricky. I didn't mean it.
Ricky scowled at his brother for another few icy seconds before turning and resuming the path.
Come on.
Kevin followed behind silently at a distance, his shoes churning mud as he shuffled with downcast eyes. Midday had come and gone by the time the boys stumbled out of the thinning screen of trees into the horseshoe-shaped clearing. The clearing sloped forward and then dropped 20 feet into a wide bowl-shaped gully. At the far end of the bowl, the ground climbed back up a grassy incline, becoming the highway. The boys could see tractor trailers, tiny in the distance, silhouetted against the summer sky. Up on the rise, the trees continued along the left-hand side of the horseshoe and became thick again beyond the gully. Ricky walked over to where the ground dropped off and peered over the edge.
Kev.
Ricky motioned his brother over with a flick of his hand.
Come here.
The younger boy joined his brother at the edge of the drop-off and looked to where Ricky was pointing. Down below, on the floor of the gully, were three derelict houses languishing in varying degrees of disrepair. All of them were tall, wooden affairs with steeply pitched roofs and gabled porches. The one closest to the highway was in the best shape of the three. It stood tall and proud despite its mottled peeling clapboards and shattered windows. The post supporting the porch roof leaned a little to the right, giving the house a disapproving sneer, but it seemed solid enough. The house in the middle was also still standing, and there were even some faded scrapes of paint left to show that it had once been yellow. However, the porch had at some point collapsed, and now the pointed gable lay in the lap of the front yard in a pile of wood chunks and rubble. Planking had been stripped from the outer sidewall, letting sunlight in to show a decayed piano tipped over on its back. The house closest to the drop-off, the one that Ricky planned to enter, was in the worst shape of all. No one could say what caused it to collapse in on itself. It looked as if an earthquake had shaken it to its foundation, or a huge unseen boot had come down from the sky and stomped it flat. Whatever it was had left the attic window sitting where the front door once was. Sunlight glinted off aluminum beer cans atop the roof, which now hovered only a few feet off the ground. The walls had bowed outward, planks and plastering littering the overgrown yard. From the rise above, Ricky pointed down at the clabbered ruin.
All right, Johnny.
His attempt at an Indian accent was very bad.
Let us explore the ancient Mayan temple.
Kevin looked from the house in the gully to his brother's excited face. His eyes were more doubtful than ever, but he managed a shaky smile.
Yeah, okay, Haji. Let's take Bandit and see what's down there. Probably nothing, but we need to be really careful anyway, okay?
Ricky clapped Kevin on the shoulder and kept speaking in his Haji voice.
Yes, very good, Johnny. Here we go.
He began making his way down the sloping brown side of the drop-off. Clods of dirt and small rocks came loose and tumbled to the gully floor as the boys half-walked, half-slid to the bottom. The ground at the foot of the slope was hectic with scraggly weeds. The yard was an ocean of hip-high, bronze-tinted grass, waving in a late afternoon breeze. Small, nameless flying things like living dust motes flitted gracefully above the boys' heads, and soft shadows slunk forward as the day grew long. Ricky and Kevin pushed through the grass and crept toward the house, studying the grounds with curiosity. While he was looking up into the trees beyond the gully, Kevin tripped over something hidden in the grass at his feet.
Crap!
The younger boy turned and looked at the ground.
What's that?
Ricky leaned down and felt for whatever it was his brother had stumbled over. After a moment, he held up a very old, very rusted length of chain. The links were as thick as his fingers. Dangling from the chain was a dented aluminum sign that read, "No Trespassing." He examined the sign for a moment and then held it up to show his brother.
Just an old sign. Come on, keep going. We're almost there.
Soon the grass gave way to a pile of smashed paving and gravel, and the wreck of the house loomed before them. It was like a shipwreck resting at the bottom of a trench. Ricky thought about hobos and geezers, crazy old homeless men who crawled into abandoned houses or squatted under playground slides. They wore filthy coats and had ratty beards and would sometimes do stuff to little kids who invaded their hiding places. Sex stuff. And then they usually murdered those kids. He was brave, though. Reckless and brave and excited. He wanted to explore the house very badly. He wasn't even sure why he'd felt this need. It was just something that burned through his veins like fire. He picked up a good-sized hunk of concrete and stepped toward the house. With a grunt, he launched it through the attic window, and a moment later hit the floor inside with a crash. When there were no angry running footsteps or howls of rage to answer the thrown rock, Ricky walked up to the crooked window frame and peeked inside.
Hey, anybody in here? Hey, we're the cops. We're coming in.
He was greeted with silence. He turned and gave Kevin a thumbs up. Kevin, looking very dubious, joined him by the window. Ricky smiled and patted him on the arm.
You ready for this, buddy?
Kevin managed an unconvincing smile and lied.
Yep, sure am. All right, then. Here we go.
Ricky reached in and grasped the sides of the old window frame, heedless of the errant nails and bits of glass. He dragged himself upward and disappeared into the dark. A moment later, he leaned out of the window and reached down to help his little brother up. Kevin took Ricky's hands and was dragged over the sill into the musty shadows of the house. The boy stood and looked around the room. Splintered furniture, filthy blankets, and old magazines lay scattered about the room, covered with a thick fall of dust and cobwebs. At the far end was a trap door that led from the attic to the second floor, which now lay toppled into the basement somewhere below. That's where Ricky wanted to go poking around. Kevin pulled the flashlight from his pocket and turned it on. Its beam looked very small and weak.
Ricky, what if there's things down there? You know, bugs, spiders, snakes, that kind of stuff.
Ricky turned to his brother, the flashlight throwing his face into ghoulish relief.
Kev, don't worry. There's nothing in here. We would have scared it out when I threw that rock in and yelled. Don't worry. There's nothing in here but us.
He strode over to the trap door, kicking detritus out of his way.
Be careful. Don't fall.
Kevin aimed the beam of the flashlight down the trap door. The collapsed second floor was little more than a narrow crawl space. Ricky climbed down through the hole, debris falling all around him. He dropped, landing on his hands and knees, and the house groaned like an old pirate ship rolling on the tide. Somewhere beneath him, something snapped. Ricky froze, waiting to see if the ground was going to disappear under his feet. When 10 seconds went by without that happening, he began to inch forward along the dark passage. Shafts of sunlight cut through the gloom here and there, from holes in the ceiling and walls. What they revealed mostly was dust, floating in the air like dry, scratchy mist. It got into the back of Ricky's throat, making him hitch and cough. He crawled a few inches and stopped. Kevin was calling from above and behind him.
Ricky, I don't like it up here. It's dark.
Kneeling in powdered plaster and demolished wood, Ricky rolled his eyes and shook his head.
Well, it's really dark down here.
His shout was loud in the tight space and sent little quakes and vibrations down into the walls. It made him a little uneasy, and he tried to call back with less force.
Besides, you've got the flashlight. I know.
Kevin sounded close to tears.
But it's barely doing anything. Are we done exploring yet? For God's sake.
Ricky was close to the end of his patience.
What did I bring him along for? Not yet. If you're not going to come help me, then shut your goddamn...
Kevin came crashing through the attic door, slamming into the floor behind Ricky.
Ricky!
The whole house shook as dust and debris rained down with a gritty patter. Ricky spun around in the tight space, the floorboards groaning in protest.
Kev?
He was scared.
Kev, you okay?
Whooping coughs answered him, followed by a tearful wailing. Ricky's heart began to hammer inside his chest.
Kevin, say something. Are you hurt?
In a panic, the older boy crept hurriedly towards his brother, Kevin sniffled, wiping his nose with the back of his hand.
I'm okay.
He was lying on his back with his knees drawn up to his thin chest. He pushed himself up on his hands, letting his feet smack against the floor. Immediately, there was a sick wooden ripping sound and a hollow crack. The younger boy dipped an inch or two, and his face went slack with terror.
Ricky?
Ricky felt a horrible chill spread through his body.
Oh, no,
he thought.
Oh, please, no. Oh, shit, no. Kevin, I'm being deadly serious now. Do not move.
Kevin began to whine and tremble. His voice was choked with mounting alarm.
Why am I gonna fall?
He started squirming and the cracking in the floor became louder. Ricky tried to calm his voice to keep from scaring his brother.
You're not going to fall, buddy, but you gotta sit still.
Instead of calm, the words came out clipped as if Ricky were angry. Kevin began to cry harder.
I'm sorry. I'm trying not to move. It's okay, buddy. It's okay. It's okay.
Ricky kept repeating the phrase as he scooted forward, hoping the words would swallow up Kevin's hysteria. The wood beneath them creaked and shifted, and there was a loud pop like an air rifle being fired. The brothers both froze, their wide eyes locked.
Ricky?
Before anything more could be said, the floor beneath Kevin gave way with a mighty scream, and the boy disappeared into the darkness below. Ricky slid forward and howled, a mixture of fear and grief exploding inside him.
Kevin, no!
He peered over the lip of the hole to spot the way the floor beneath him sagged. A moment later, he heard the clatter of wood hidden somewhere far below. It was oddly muffled, as if the ground below was carpeted. He waited to hear the sickening thud of Kevin's body hitting, but it never came. A moment later, the younger boy's voice, hollow in the huge space and full of dismay, came floating up through the gloom.
Ricky?
Ricky's pulse quickened.
Kevin?
He strained to pick out his brother's shape in the shadows. He squinted, and there, about 7 or 8 feet below the hole, were two white spots with another sliver of white between them. Kevin's hands and forehead. He had managed to catch on the edge of an old floorboard that hung out above the basement and was now dangling there.
Holy shit, you didn't fall.
Kevin grunted.
Yes, I did. I know, dummy. I mean, you didn't fall all the way.
Immediately, he wished he hadn't called Kevin a dummy.
Are you okay? I'm scared. My arms are hurting, and this board keeps moving. I don't know how long I can hold on.
Ricky sat back and gritted his teeth, trying to think of a way to help his brother. He was sweating heavily and trying not to give in to panic. He wiped his arm across his face, streaking his forehead with grime. His first thought was that he'd have to find a way to get down there and hoist his brother up. This plan seemed fraught with disaster, and he dismissed it almost immediately. He couldn't see the surface he'd be dropping to or how far down it was. There was no way of telling how much floor was available for walking and standing on. What if only a few scattered boards were clinging to a couple of rotted supports? What if Ricky's dropping down caused Kevin's board to move or break? What if the vibration of Ricky's landing jostled Kevin's hands free? It was unbearably risky. Without more light to help appraise the landscape of the lower floor, there was no way he could safely get down to his brother.
Ricky? Ricky?
Kevin's voice was cold with terror.
There's something moving around down here. Down underneath me. In the basement. Don't worry about it, buddy. It's nothing. Probably just a cat or something.
Ricky scooted a few inches back from the hole and began feeling randomly around the floor for anything that might spark an idea. This was a waste of time, he knew, but his brain seemed stuck.
I don't think so. It sounds big.
Kevin let out a desperate sob.
Please hurry. It sounds big and weird. I don't think it's a cat. It sounds like it's getting closer to me.
It's not getting closer, Kev. You're up in the air.
I think it's coming up the wall.
The little boy began crying helplessly.
Please. Please, please hurry.
Suddenly, Ricky's hand bumped something heavy. It rolled a few inches away from him. He reached out, and after a moment of groping, his fingers closed over the flashlight. A burst of excitement and triumph bloomed in his chest, and he smiled.
Hold on, buddy. I'm going to check out your situation. I found the flashlight.
Kevin's voice was a shaky whisper.
Okay.
Ricky thumbed the flashlight on. It was surprisingly bright in the cloistered crawlspace. He lay on his stomach and shined the light down the hole where his brother was hanging. His smile vanished instantly. Kevin's head came up and he squinted into the flashlight's beam. Ricky had guessed correctly that his brother was holding on to an old plank of the flooring that jutted out over a massive stone basement. Most of the rest of the first and second floors had crumbled down into the bowels of the house. All that remained were a few splintered floorboards clinging to four or five crossbeams at either end of the room. They gave the impression of a mouth full of crooked teeth, open wide and hungry. It was immediately clear that Ricky was not going to be able to get down to his brother. The plank Kevin hung from was wobbling like a diving board and could go at any minute. Ricky shined a light around the cavernous basement, looking for anything that might give him an idea. He swung the beam up the back wall, and his eyes suddenly went wide. Something was moving down there. Far up on the wall, something seemed to flinch when the flashlight beam struck it. Ricky shined the light back down. There, again, a large, a very large, dark, oval smudge seemed to drop a few inches below the flashlight's glow. A lump formed in Ricky's throat. Whatever that was could certainly not be whatever it appeared to be. Not the thing that Ricky's eyes were trying to convince his brain it was. That's not possible. Sweat dripped from his hairline into his eyes. Not in real life. He moved the light down and the thing moved again. This time to the side, but Ricky tracked it with the flashlight beam. It was too big to be spotlit entirely by the tiny pinprick of light. It seemed to be the size of a truck tire, but it was hard to tell from that distance in the dark.
It's moving again,
Kevin squealed.
I can't hold on.
Hold on, Kevin. Just don't move or talk or anything. I'm figuring this out.
An overwhelming fear settled into Ricky's arms and legs and numbed his brain. He leaned forward and stared down at the floor of the basement. As the flashlight beam played across the nameless debris at the bottom of the chasm, Ricky began to realize that some of what he had thought was plaster dust actually seemed to be thick garlands of dusty cobwebs. He scanned the floor with the light and yelped suddenly at something that had been revealed.
Ah!
In the corner, near a pile of flooring, was a horribly familiar shape that seemed to be wrapped up in tattered bandages like a mummy.
What is it? Why'd you scream like that?
Kevin sounded breathless.
Nothing, buddy. Don't worry about it.
Tears squeezed from the corners of Ricky's eyes.
What am I gonna do?
What had begun as a pleasant afternoon lark had turned into a horror movie. Kevin called out again.
Can you find some rope or something? I'm starting to slip.
Rope. He didn't know where there was rope, but Ricky did know where there was something similar. He sprung to his feet and reached into the attic door to pull himself up.
Kevin, hold on a little longer. I'm going to get that chain from outside.
Kevin's cry was fierce.
No! Please don't leave me alone in here. I think that thing is a rat.
Ricky didn't think it was a rat. Not a normal one anyway, but kept that thought to himself.
I have to go outside to get that chain. I'll be right back in. Now quit screaming or you're gonna fall down there.
Kevin's voice trembled.
Okay, but hurry up.
Ricky had hauled himself into the attic before his brother said okay. He sprinted across the floor to the window and quickly squirmed out, dropping to the ground. The sun, which had been shining brightly when the boys went into the house, was now hidden behind a screen of long, colorless clouds. The little gully was filled with shadows and the air had cooled. Ricky thought there was probably going to be a thunderstorm before too long. He shot across the yard and into the long grass, kicking his feet, trying to find the chain. Now that he was outside, it felt like time had sped up drastically. Every moment, he was sure, was the moment that his brother's fingers were slipping off the end of the plank, dropping him into the basement with... Well, Ricky didn't want to think about that. His breath was coming fast, and he began whipping grass aside, bent at the waist, trying to find a chain. He found it less than a minute after bursting through the window, but to Ricky it felt closer to 10. He grabbed the chain and began reeling in the rusty links, wrapping them around his forearm. He had no idea how long it was and hadn't even considered that it might not be enough to reach Kevin. It felt like minutes were flying by, spinning out riotlessly and escaping with all hope of saving his little brother. That's when Ricky heard a sound from within the house. It was very faint but unmistakable. His brother was screaming, and if Ricky could hear it out here, then it meant Kevin was really giving his little lungs a workout. He turned and ran for the house, letting the unwrapped part of the chain trail behind him like a long gray ribbon. When he reached the window, he tossed in the section he had managed to gather up, hearing it clink to the floor as it unwound inside the attic. He leapt up at the sill, nearly banging his head on the topmost part of the frame. As he sailed back into the murky attic, his brother's screams came at him in waves of increasing volume. Ricky rolled on his side and realized that Kevin was screaming words. After a moment, he understood what Kevin was saying and his blood ran cold.
Get away! Get away! Ricky, hurry up! It's huge!
I'm coming, buddy! Hang on!
Ricky snatched up the pile of chain that had settled in the dust on the floor beneath the window, laying it over his shoulder, and ran for the attic door. He was a step away from dropping down through the hole in the floor when the length of chain that still hung outside the window caught and jerked him right off his feet. He landed hard on his butt and the air whooshed out of him. The house shivered and creaked. Ricky sat there dazed and shook his head. Down below, Kevin's screaming rose an octave and splintered.
Ricky! Ricky!
Ricky climbed to his feet, a little unsteady but unharmed, and looked back to where the chain had snagged over the windowsill. He ran over and lifted the rusted links and began hauling in the rest. It was the no trespassing sign. It had bounded up on the outside and gotten stuck under a piece of clapboard. Ricky shook it violently, suddenly furious at its audacity, and hissed at it through clenched teeth.
Oh, you piece of shit!
He yanked more chain, pulling it through the gravel at the base of the house, and finally, after a few moments, managed to get the rest of it through the window. All the while, Kevin's impossibly high-pitched shriek sailed up from the darkness, rattling in Ricky's ears and heart. The older boy, now free of snags, rushed back to the attic door and slid to a sitting position. He was in a hurry but would not make the mistake of dropping full tilt down the hole. If the floor collapsed, it would mean the end for both of them. He scooted to the edge of the opening and forced himself to climb carefully down. The seconds ticked by, and it felt like a long time before his feet touched wood. Once he was down in the truncated hallway, he tugged the chain in after him. Ricky picked up the flashlight from the floor where he had left it and shined it through the broken floor into the basement. He aimed the light at the back wall where the large moving shape had been, and the wall was bare. He shined the light along the basement floor. No sign of anything moving. His brother continued to scream, and his cries had melted into one long squealing wail.
Kevin!
Ricky shouted down, trying to cut through the caterwauling.
Kev!
Kevin either didn't hear or was too scared to pay attention. Time was fleeting. It already felt like an entire day had passed since the younger boy went through the floor. Ricky couldn't waste another moment. He opened his mouth and shouted as loudly as he could,
"Kevin, shut your fucking mouth and listen!"
Almost immediately, the screaming dried up to a trickle of tearful whimpering. Ricky very rarely used the F word in front of Kevin because the younger boy always tattled. Hearing it now had shocked him quiet. A lunatic giggle tried to worm its way up Ricky's throat, and he swallowed it down with a grimace. If they got out of this alive, he was going to use the F word every day from here on out. He continued in a much less aggressive tone.
"Kevin, can you hear me?"
"Yes."
There was a lot of panic in that quivering word.
"Where is it?"
Ricky did not need to explain what he meant. A horrible keening sound came from his brother.
"Oh, it's up under the floor where I'm at. It's right in front of me. Ricky, it's huge."
His voice was beginning to rise again in volume and pitch.
"It's upside down and looking at me. Ricky, God!"
He broke into a sob and then somehow managed to get a hold of himself.
"It's a few feet away. I've never seen one this big."
Ricky's heart was thudding, and adrenaline shot through his veins like rocket fuel. He lay on his stomach, his arms and head positioned over the hole. He began threading the chain down to Kevin.
"Is it moving?"
Ricky saw Kevin duck his head below the level of the floorboard and quickly looked back up.
"No, it's just looking at me."
Ricky nodded to himself.
"All right, look. I'm lowering this chain down to you. When it gets down in front of your face, you're gonna have to let go of the board with one hand and grab onto it. Quick, and hold tight, okay?"
"But I'll fall."
Ricky continued to lower the chain. It was swinging and bumping against the planking now.
"You're going to fall if you don't do this. Plus, how long do you think that thing is going to just sit there and watch?"
Kevin sounded doubtful but resigned.
"Okay, you're right."
"I know."
Ricky took the pile of chain that was next to him and shoved it under his body, hoping his weight would help keep it from unspooling when Kevin grabbed on. He wasn't entirely sure this would work, but there was no other option.
"You see it?"
"Yep."
"Okay, want to do the count of three?"
Kevin's voice was choked with fresh tears.
"Yeah, that sounds good."
"Okay."
Ricky could feel his heart pounding against the floor.
"Here we go. When you grab it, try to stick your fingers through the links to hold on better."
His throat worked and slow tears spilled down his dirty cheeks.
"One."
"I love you, Ricky. I'm sorry."
Ricky sniffed and his chest hitched.
"Two. I love you too, buddy. Don't worry about it."
He took a deep breath and tightened his grip on the chain. He closed his eyes and said a very quick prayer in his head.
"God, please don't let this go wrong."
He took one more deep breath and shouted,
"Three!"
Several things happened at once. Kevin let forth a hoarse shout like some ancient barbarian charging into battle. At nearly the same instant, the chain pulled taut in Ricky's hands and slipped forward alarmingly and began swinging. Kevin's full weight, slight though it was, dragged Ricky and the chain further over the hole in the floor as he let go of the plank. There was a vertiginous moment when Ricky thought Kevin wasn't going to be able to hold on. He could see him down there hanging on with one hand while the other one groped at the jutting floorboard. Then he had both tiny white hands and both legs wrapped around the chain. The strain on Ricky's arms was intense, but it wasn't as bad as he had expected. He felt like a superhero, as if he could pull a full-grown man up to his level. He let out a triumphant laugh.
"I got you! Kev, we did it! I got you, man!"
A beautiful smile spread across his face. Then Kevin screamed. Something long and black and tapered had snaked around the lip of the floor down there and was pawing at Kevin's legs. Another appeared, and another, and yet a fourth, all poking and prodding at the younger boy with fluid yet somehow mechanical movements from beneath the floorboards. Ricky watched helplessly, horrified but fascinated. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. Kevin's eyes shined in the gloom, wide and scared.
Pull me up! It's coming, Ricky! It's coming!
The chain began to bounce and swing, making it hard for Ricky to keep the slack beneath his body. He slipped one forearm under the chain and began scooting backward on his stomach. The flake and rusty links pressed painfully into his skin, making him wince. He gave another mighty heave and was rewarded with a few more inches ratcheting over the lip of the hole. He knew that if he didn't sit up to gain some leverage, he was never going to get his brother out. He focused his strength on his tormented arms and began rising, first to his elbows and then slowly to his knees, till he was on all fours. The pressure from the chain had grown immense, as if there were a two-ton boulder at the end of it instead of a 50-pound child. As he worked his way to a sitting position, his brother's frightened shrieks continued to reverberate through the ruined house.
It's coming up, Ricky! Hurry! Oh God, it's climbing up after me!
Ricky didn't waste any energy trying to respond. He just kept tugging at the chain, straining and sweating, as he finally managed to sit up and plant his rear on the dusty floor. He took two or three gasping breaths and then really settled into dragging Kevin up. Now, instead of only a couple of inches at a time, Ricky was able to gain 5 or 6 with every pull. He leaned back against the weight of his brother on the chain and braced himself against the floor with his feet splayed. The muscles in his arms felt like they were going to pop free right off his bones. Despite this, he began to pull faster, knowing that each link that snapped back into the crawl space brought him closer to getting Kevin back. Ricky had tuned out his younger brother squalling and concentrated all his energy on the physical act of pulling. He'd retreated into a silent chamber of focus where all he could hear were his own grunts and the clinking of the chain against wood. With reserves of strength he didn't know he possessed, Ricky began hauling up longer segments, hand over hand. He'd found a rhythm and was rocking back and forth, the burning at his elbows and shoulders far from his mind. It was almost anticlimactic when Kevin's hand, waving madly at the end of his skinny wrist, popped up through the hole in the floor, grasping madly for the sides. The younger boy found the floor and grabbed it, helping Ricky in the final massive tug that brought Kevin up from the depths of the house. His top half burst through like a fish breaching the water, and he flopped down into the dust between Ricky's feet, sobbing. With a startling crash, the world and all its cacophonous racket slammed back into Ricky's head, shoving him out of his reverie. He let the chain fall from his raw, bleeding hands and grimaced as his arms began cramping up. He wanted to lay back and close his eyes for a while, but the floor was bending and creaking beneath their combined weight. He knew they needed to get back up to the attic.
Kevin, hey, I got you, man.
Kevin had his face buried in his arms, crying and moaning. He didn't answer.
Kev, come on. You gotta get up so we can get out of here. You wanna get out of here, don't you?
When his brother still didn't respond, Ricky's frayed nerves snapped and he hissed with fury.
You get your ass up off that floor. You hear me?
Kevin finally choked back his tears and raised his head. His face was streaked and filthy, his hair matted with sweat. He looked small and frail, like a cat rescued from a well.
I'm sorry. I'm just scared. I'm sorry. Please don't be mad.
Ricky cut off Kevin's apology with a wave of his hand.
Shut up. Don't worry about it. Let's just get out of here before this floor drops us both down there.
What about the giant?
I said shut up. We're getting out.
Ricky had decided that probably in their panic, he and Kevin had imagined something climbing around on the wall down there. He doubted they had seen anything at all. The silk-enshrouded mummy and the other odd shapes were just old garbage covered in dust. It didn't matter anyway, they were leaving. Ricky helped Kevin carefully to his feet and hefted the smaller boy up through the attic door by his underarms. As Kevin's feet left the ground, the floor beneath them bowed ominously downward.
Hurry up!
Ricky stood on tiptoe, waiting for his brother to finish pulling himself up into the attic. A moment later, Kevin clambered the rest of the way through the door, and Ricky followed, wincing at the pain in his shoulders and arms. Once they were on the much more solid floor of the attic, they both collapsed onto their backs, breathing heavily. Kevin's skinny sides heaved in and out under his rib cage, and Ricky's arms, hands, and legs shook and spasmed. A few seconds passed. Ricky sat up, leaning on his hands, and coughed. He looked over at Kevin, the smaller boy wheezing in the dust, and called out to him.
Hey, you okay over there?
Kevin lifted one arm into the air and gave a thumbs up.
I'm all right. Thanks for saving me.
Ricky sighed.
Yeah, no problem.
He cocked his head and frowned.
Hey, you hear that?
Kevin lifted his head off the floor and listened. After a moment, he nodded.
Yeah, what is that?
Before Ricky had a chance to wager a guess, four long probing legs as thick around as Kevin's shin rose up through the attic doorway, clicking and clattering against the floor. Kevin screamed and was on his feet in an instant, backing away toward the window.
Holy shit!
Ricky's eyes popped wide open as he watched the thing crawl up into the attic only a few feet away from them. There was no denying it now. A massive spider, gray, black, and hairy, yanked its flat abdomen up over the edge of the trap door. Its legs spread out around it in a 7-foot span. Two smaller appendages pawed the air above its head, and Ricky could see its slobbering mouth parts working furiously beneath the constellation of 8 shiny black eyes. It made a strange hissing sound, like air escaping from a basketball, and it bounced lightly on the sharp tips of its feet as it faced the boys. Ricky began backing away, not hurrying, but not moving slowly either. He heard Kevin scrambling up onto the windowsill and out of the house behind them and was glad. If anything happened in here, Ricky wouldn't want him to see it. Hopefully, he'd be climbing up the rise and out of the gully in a minute or so. The spider scuttled forward a few inches for every couple of steps Ricky took backward. It was surely capable of great speed, but it seemed hesitant. Maybe it's not used to being out of the basement, away from its web. Ricky could feel his pulse in his throat. The spider's quested footsteps reminded him of pencils being tapped against desks, and Ricky absurdly wished that he would survive to return to school in the fall. Suddenly, he felt his lower back collide with the windowsill. There was nowhere else to go. Ricky didn't know whether to turn his back on the huge, palpitating creature and hurry out head first, or try and climb out backwards and drop. If he dropped, he'd risk hitting his head on one of the large chunks of concrete that lay beneath the window. The spider was not pausing in its approach now. It continued towards Ricky with a hypnotizing slowness. It had closed most of the distance and was almost within grabbing distance.
Screw it! I'm going out backward.
He placed his palms against the sill and hoisted himself up and out the window in one fluid movement. There was a nauseating drop, and then he hit the ground. Gravel digging painfully into his back. Almost immediately, the spider was climbing out the window. Its drowsing scrabbling replaced with wicked speed. It raced down the front of the collapsed gable, its long legs pistoning wildly. As Ricky dragged himself off the ground, he heard a voice calling out from the field behind him.
Ricky, it's coming!
Kevin was standing in the tall grass watching the scene unfold, mouth agape. Ricky sprinted through the broken terrain of the yard, listening to the typewriter sounds of the spider's legs as it gave chase. He knew that he could never hope to outrun it. He imagined how it would feel to have it sink its enormous fangs into the back of his neck, paralyzing him so that it could spin a gauzy suit of silk for him. Ricky closed his eyes and tried to put a little extra steam in his stride.
Stay away from my brother!
Kevin's voice rang out clear beneath the cloudy sky and echoed around the gully. Ricky opened his eyes in time to see a small piece of concrete leave his brother's hand. It sailed past Ricky and crashed into the ground behind them. It had missed its intended mark, but suddenly the furious scurrying sound stopped. Ricky risked a glance over his shoulder and saw the spider had stopped and risen up on its four back legs, its front legs undulating hideously in the air. He stopped and faced it, realizing the ground at his feet was littered with chunks of rock and concrete of all sizes. He picked up a large piece of flagging and whizzed it at the spider. His throw did not miss. It struck the creature hard between its third and fourth legs on the left side. It made an awful squealing sound and scrambled backward towards the house. Ricky picked up another piece of rock and threw it, catching the spider on the top of its head near its crown of eyes. It flattened to the ground for a moment, its legs jerking with confusion. Ricky backed up till he was standing next to Kevin in the field. From this distance, somehow the spider's size was even more impressive. It was as if their father's easy chair had grown legs and started walking around. It looked dizzy and stunned as it reversed across the yard. Kevin whispered beside him,
I've got two more rocks if it looks like it's going to chase us again.
Ricky nodded, his gaze utterly possessed by the gray-black monstrosity that was even now squeezing itself into a space beneath what used to be the porch. He could see it hunched in there, watching them. Where had it come from, he wondered. How did it get so big? And on the heels of that, was the mummy thing in the basement really a dead person? He found himself remembering the missing dog poster back in the neighborhood. He wondered how many posters this thing was responsible for. As the questions rolled around inside his head, thunder rumbled from somewhere beyond the rise. Ricky felt a drop of rain on his nose. It was going to storm soon.
Come on, Kevin. We need to get home.
Kevin took Ricky's hand, and the older boy, usually disgusted at such gestures, let his hand be held. They backed away from the ruined house, never taking their eyes off the twitching black shape beneath the porch until they were halfway up the rise. As the brothers climbed out of the gully, it occurred to Ricky to wonder what sort of nightmares might be hiding in the other two houses down there. Strangely, he felt a wild urge, far back and deep down where his brain met up with his heart, to go back and explore them. Not today, though. He smiled to himself, putting his arm around Kevin's thin shoulders as the rain began to fall. He looked over his shoulder, taking one last look at the forlorn houses. The giant was nowhere to be seen. Not today, but maybe someday. And that was Giant by R.K. Conbrink. A good reminder that R.K.'s excellent collection, These Lonely Places, is available now from our friends at Valox Books. Check out the link in the show notes, or just head to valoxbooks.com, where you can find R.K. and plenty of other excellent authors you've heard of on this show. And if you're more of a listener than a reader, you can look for These Lonely Places on Audible within the month. A little about the author. R.K. Conbrink is a writer and artist who lives in Cincinnati, Ohio, with his wife Elise and two sons, Colin and Cole. He's a founding cast member of the popular horror podcast, Night of the Living Podcast. He enjoys iced tea, unsweet, and genuinely believes in Sasquatch, unsweet. Well, thanks, R.K., and a special thanks to Valox Books, publisher of High Octane Nightmare Fuel. Be sure to check out their website at valoxbooks.com for your next read. Unsweet iced tea. What the hell's the world coming to, Chester?
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, friend, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, but don't go chasing any tail out there. It might be Chester's, and he doesn't cotton to that. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Don't resent growing old. Many are denied that privilege. And there's still plenty of time to go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.